Your heart sweats, your body shakes. You can't sleep, you can't eat. Your throat is tight, you can't breathe. Another kiss is all you need.
This is Make a Caged Bird Sing, a band of fanfic featuring members of Panic at the Disco, written by Dancin' Butterfly and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated R, contains the pairings Brendan Urie Ryan Ross, Ryan Ross Spencer Smith, and hints at future Ryan Ross Brendan Urie Spencer Smith results. Warnings: vampires, gore, violence, religious imagery, angst, death of the permanent and vampiric impermanent variety of men, women, and children, biting, and torture a la Angelus' Making of Drusilla. Author's notes. This is a standalone story in a larger mental universe I'm building that is a Bandom Buffyverse fusion. Buffyverse vampire rules apply. I did the best I could for the historical setting. Thanks to Ariadne83 and to Sweden for the beta and handholdings. Brendan is born the youngest of five children. He chose the English spelling nearly 800 years later, in America, when he let go of the little village in what would later be called County Kerry, and embraced the new world full of blood ready to be spilled. The name itself is chosen by his mother, who could not even write her own name. His mother is a strong woman, good and kind, and she scrapes together every last scrap of coin to send him to the Abbey to be fostered when he turns 12. It's difficult to leave his family. His mother called him her miracle because they both should have died when she was giving birth. He was turned wrong and the cord was wrapped around his neck. He shouldn't have survived. And growing up, she tells him every night she prayed for him and promised the Savior and the saints that if they could both live, he would belong to Christ and the saint of the ramshackle church he was christened in. Brendan isn't the kind of boy to ask questions when given a gift, so when she sends him north to the monastery outside Galway after his father dies, he doesn't cry. The lessons are fine. The monks can be cruel and caring by turns. Brendan learns scripture by heart, and gardening, and how to read and write in Greek, Latin, and his own tongue of Gaelic, which is more than his mother could have dreamed of as a little girl. Brendan is 16 the first time one of the brothers hear him sing. The man cries and drags Brendan into the chapel and finds the abbot and demands that Brendan show him because it's a gift, he declares, from God himself sent to praise his works and ways. After that, they train him with instruments. The lyre, the flute, drums, the harp. They send him into the villages and towns nearby to help carry home whatever the abbey can't grow or make for itself. They put him in the choir, and people stop falling asleep at service. Before he is 21, Brendan is spoken of as far east as London, though he has never left Ireland. It is because of his voice, Brendan knows, that the men arrive in Galway. They are finely dressed in furs and fabrics dyed rich colors, though they traveled with only a small entourage. They are young men, clean-shaven and dark of hair. They are tall and lean and beautiful. They sit in the back of the church, and the thinner and sharper looking of the two approaches him after the service. He is improperly forward, and he speaks Gaelic with an accent Brendan has never heard before. "Pretty little songbird," he murmurs, reaching out and touching Brendan's jaw. No one has touched him like that before, with such intent, and he shivers. Tell me, lovely, what can I do to convince you to sing only for me and my companion? Nothing, Brendan wants to say, for I will sing for you forever as long as you look at me like that, touch me like that. He swallows the words and shakes his head instead, but only a little, not dislodging the cool contact. I cannot. My voice, as old of me, is committed to God. His companion clicks his tongue. Not true. You're still the novice. You haven't married yourself to the cross just yet. Come away with us, my lovely nightingale, the first man says. Let me show you true beauty. Things this small life in the small abbey will never reveal. You're gorgeous in the night, little songbird. Let us show you how to make it yours. A yes is burning in the back of his throat. He wants to agree. He wants to be swept off and away, to see lands beyond the sea. England, the continent, the Holy Land, the mysterious lands east of Persia that he knew of from the travelogues he read in his Greek studies, but cannot truly imagine. All these things he wants to give in to wanting, but he is alive, his mother's voice whispers in the back of his mind, because of God's grace and most loving mercy. I must remain here. I thank you, good sirs. The praise means more than I can express. The mouth of the sharply featured man who called him pretty tightened with displeasure. It makes his eyes flash, and for a moment, Brendan thought he saw a hint of gold in them. He supposed it was just the candlelight. It was vespers, and the chapel was shadow and firelight. We'll see, he bites out, his teeth clicking. It sends a shiver up Brendan's spine, and he is transfixed as the two men seem to float out of the room. Then his life resumes normalcy, and he forgets the beautiful men with their rich clothes and heady promises. There are a few goats to milk, chickens to feed, vegetables to tend to, and every now and then some books to bind, prayers to say, cleaning to do, candles to make. His time is filled by the blur of daily life, until word arrives from home in the form of his oldest sister Kara's husband. Dirty and tired, he falls forward onto Brendan, fists catching tight in the fabric of his robes. You must come home. It's your mother. His mother has been burned. Badly. Something about a freak barn fire. They travel like the hounds of hell are chasing them and arrive in time for her to die with Brendan's hand between hers, his lips pressed to her singed fingers. He is comforted by the fact that she was able to be given the last rites. She'd have liked that. Were she able to like anything through the pain? His brother-in-law squeezes his shoulder at the funeral as his mother is buried beside his father and says, Stay, you're needed here. His second sister's oldest child is 5, and she clings to his leg throughout the priest's sermon over the open grave, and, looking at her, Brendan knows he can't say no. He's home 2 days when his brother Matthew is found dead behind the church. He is beaten so bloody that his limbs are in pieces and his face is unrecognizable. He's only identified by the wedding ring on his broken finger. His new wife sinks into the grass and lets loose hysterical screams, loud and long like the banshees Brendan's mother told him about as a child. Matthew is only 2 years older than Brendan, and for him to be dead so young, so soon after their mother, rocks the whole family. His older brother and his 2 sons, aged 10 and 8, are all crushed when a home they are repairing collapses. His brother and oldest child are killed instantly. The youngest takes nearly a full day to die. And when he's gone, his mother hangs herself with the bedclothes she was given by her parents on her marriage. The town folk call them cursed when she's found hanging from a tree behind the house. Brendan prays for her, even though he knows that all the Paternosters and Ave Marias he could ever say won't redeem her soul from hell. It isn't even enough to erase whatever sins Brendan has committed to bring this wrath upon his family, because his sister Kayla and her family are found in their homes with their throats ripped out less than a week after Matthew's family is buried. The beautiful men appear at the edges of Kayla's funeral. Brendan approaches them, moving slowly as grief weighs him down. "Can I help you, good sirs?" "You may call me Orion, my companion Spencer," says the angular one. He reaches out and presses cold fingers to the side of Brendan's neck. It feels good, soothing and arousing at once. "And it is a question of if we can help you. Let us take you from this grief." My family. I can't leave them." Spencer smiles at him. "Of course, little saint. We understand." The next day, Kara's daughter is gutted. Her intestines are outside her small body, which is draped artistically across the crucifix in the church. Kara's husband has to drag her away from the altar, kicking and screaming, but Brendan doesn't move. He stares up at the little girl he only met a month ago, who had his sister's eyes and her father's smile, blood oozing off into a puddle on the floor. Pieces of her defile this house of God, and looking into her empty, horror-struck face, Brendan knows that the people outside are right. He brought this nightmare with him. At that moment, he doesn't know how or why, but he is sure of it as the air in his lungs. Brendan doesn't know what happens to Kara and her husband. He is in the room, sitting across from his sister, holding her hand and watching her cry, when something moves through the room so fast it's just a blur of motion. One moment she is speaking to him about how they are going to have to bury her little girl with Matthew's children, and the next she is choking and spluttering as blood pours down her chest from her slit throat. She dies gagging in Brendan's arms, fingernails digging into his arms so hard that he bleeds, and he mumbles what prayers he can remember into her hair as she slips away. He trips over her husband's bloodless corpse on his way out of the house. The long journey is a haze of his family's faces, begging him for help as he stumbles through the countryside, heading north to the only other home he has ever known. He is still wearing the same tunic and trousers Kara bled on when he arrives back at the monastery, hungry and tired, having slept only where he fell on the road. He falls face down into Brother Christopher's herb garden and wakes up in his own bed, cleaned and draped in his own robes. The abbot comes to his bedside and listens while Brendan sobs out the horrors he saw. When he's done, he takes the sackcloth and ash the abbot gives him, and he atones in the hopes of finding forgiveness for whatever sins brought down such destruction on his family. He spends the next 2 months on his knees, fasting until his brothers find him passed out in the chapel. It's enough to impress the abbot, and he tells Brendan, with a gentle squeeze of his shoulder, that this trial was a terrible loss, but has prepared his soul for great things, and that he is finally, finally ready to take his orders. The night he is meant to dedicate himself to God is drenched in blood. The two beautiful men, Ryan and Spencer, arrive with four others. Brendan watches as their faces model and rise, warping into those of demons straight from hell itself. The abbey is filled with the screams and cries of the dying, and when it's all over, Brendan is left, untouched but drenched in blood, rocking back and forth in the middle of the pieces of his brethren. Ryan comes to kneel before him, his face human again, though it is coated in blood except where his tongue has licked it away. He wipes the gore out of Brendan's eyes and smiles at him, all teeth. "Hello. How are you, little bird? We've missed you." "Please," Brendan sobs, as Spencer appears beside them, inhuman features twisted in concern. "Please just kill me." "Oh, my nightingale," Ryan murmurs, thumbing at his tears. "No." Brendan feels as if he's been hit, but he hasn't. Not once. Their violence never touched him directly. It makes no sense. He tries jerking away from the touch, but Ryan doesn't allow it. His soft, cool fingers follow him, soothing and strong. But now Brendan knows. He knows what they can do. What they did to everyone Brendan has ever loved. He feels his muscles fall slack in surrender as it sinks in that he isn't going to get away. "Isn't this what you want while you're here? Don't you want my blood?" "Of course we do," Spencer soothes. "That doesn't mean we want you to die. You're better than these cattle." He kicks at the severed arm of Brother Christopher. Dismemberment had been his reward for trying to protect Brendan at the end, brandishing his crucifix necklace at a monster-faced Ryan. Ryan tore the cross from his hand. Smoke had come from Ryan's skin for a moment before he dropped the cross and ripped Brother Christopher's limbs off. The arm skitters across the floor and onto Christopher's headless chest. Brendan is glad that Ryan is holding his face in his hand, so that he doesn't want to look over at the hole in his friend's chest where his heart once was. "We want you to live, Nightingale," Ryan croons. "You'll live forever soon, so don't be sad." He smiles, as if to prove the point. "Come on now. Sing for me and show me how lovely you'll always be." "Merciful Mother of God, please, 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 Christ, please let me die." Brendan sobs, the words ripping out of his throat without his mind giving them thought. "I would do as he asks, little saint," Spencer advises. "He'll make you regret it for the next century." "Sing me a hymn, Nightingale." His request is so earnest it makes Brendan's stomach flip and churn. "Sing me something sad and sweet for all the damned. They're listening, you know. The newly dead always are." Brendan opens his mouth to say no, but music comes out. Something wordless and sad that he heard a lifetime ago. Something Kara or his mother hummed when he was a babe. Maybe his father sang it before he passed into the shadows of his memory. He doesn't know, but it seems to be enough because Ryan's expression is that of the calm, handsome man who first praised Brendan months ago. He smiles at Brendan, radiant at the song. The doors to the chapel slam open, and Brendan breaks off mid-note. "Are we done here yet?" A man with dark hair and dark skin whines as the doors swish closed behind him. He is shirtless, his chin and chest drenched in blood across a tangled thorn tattoo winding around his neck. "Everyone's dead. I'm bored and the boys aren't hungry anymore." He sighs, even as he licks blood away from his fingers. "Petrus," Ryan hisses, "if you interrupt my pet singing again, you won't like what I do to you." The man rolls his eyes. "Please, just do it already. You can break your toy in later. We need to get moving before someone notices and decides that burning the cursed land's the best way to purge their demons. We lost Brent that way, remember?" Ryan curses, in a language that is familiar yet not. A variant of Greek, maybe? Then returns his attention to Brendan and reverts to Gaelic. "I'm sorry, little bird. My annoying child has a point." "He usually does," Spencer agrees, amused. "That's why we keep him around." "That and the fact that I am a truly fantastic fuck," Petrus calls out across the room. Out of the corner of his eye, Brendan can see him ferreting through the severed limbs of the brothers where they are stacked behind a pew. "Like a fine wine, my ass just gets better and better with age." Spencer laughs, and Ryan just shakes his head. "A 1,000 years, you think we'd have managed to teach him some manners?" Ryan complains. "You tried," Spencer consoles him, with another of those gentle smiles. He reaches out and tucks the strands of hair behind Ryan's ear, with such tenderness that Brendan wants to cry. "Monsters like this shouldn't be able to look at each other with love in their eyes." "You'll do better with this one, my own." "Your faith in me, beloved, is always appreciated." Ryan leans into the touch and nearly purrs. The way Ryan moves into the touch pushes Brendan's entire body backwards, making his knees unfold from up against his chest and sending his arms sprawling back to hold him up. "Go on, then. I'll check the scriptorium. You take care of the nightingale, yes?" "Of course." He turns his head, kisses Spencer's palm before his hands pull away. He jerks his head at the bare-chested man. "Petrus, help him." Petrus clicks his tongue a few times. "Bossy, bossy. You could say please, you know." "Petrus?" "Nope. Try again, sire." Ryan heaves an exasperated sigh. "Please go with him. He knows what he's looking for. He'll tell you when you both get there." "See, was that so hard?" he demands. Ryan doesn't respond because Petrus and Spencer are both gone a breath later, leaving Brendan alone with his own personal devil. "You know," Ryan says. He moves to smoothly straddle Brendan's hips with his thighs. "If I had my way, we would do this at my home in Rome. Spencer and I would take you for hours before we turned you. Fuck you open and blind, and then soak in all your delicious heat. By the time we turned you, you'd be begging to be mine for eternity with every one of your last breaths." He heaves a sad sigh and leans forward, brushing cold lips along Brendan's jaw. "Such a pity we don't have the time. I love the warmth. It's the only thing I miss." "That's a sin," he thinks. "Not a mortal one. Carnal. Lesser, but no less deadly to his soul. It is one he has actively fought since he reached manhood, and this body became a minor enemy." He shakes his head. "Please," he tries again, because it worked for the monster with the necklace of thorns. "Please, I don't..." "Oh, little bird, I know you haven't. Virginal as Vesta herself you are. Don't worry. When the hard part is over, we'll fix that too." He kisses Brendan then. The first lips ever to touch Brendan, are cold and slick with blood, and they take his mouth like they have taken everything else in Brendan's world. He hates the chill and the wet, and most of all he hates how good it feels. How, even with the blood and the terror and the death all around him, on his skin and his nose and eyes, he still finds himself growing hard as Ryan teases his tongue with his own and pulls his hips downward. He's panting when Ryan pulls back, but the smile is so predatory, Brendan wonders how he isn't already dead. My gorgeous little songbird, I'm going to enjoy eating you right up. He bites then, digs his teeth in deep and hard into the side of Brendan's neck, and oh God and all the saints, it hurts! It's the pain he's been waiting for, and it is at once so much better and so much worse than he was expecting. It's the punishment for his mother, sisters, brothers, nieces, and nephews that he has been waiting for. Yet it is edged in a pleasure that is dark and ugly at its core. Brendan's whole being wraps around that pleasure, even as the pain rocks him. Maybe this is what heaven will be like. This pleasure, without the agony of sharp teeth and digging fingers. He hopes so. Mumbles a prayer for it to be true against the wrist shoved into his mouth. He tastes rich, coppery blood, thick and sluggish on his tongue, choking him like Kara in his arms at the end. And the world goes black. Brendan wakes up hungry and alone in darkness that is bright as day. He can hear the shouting in that strange dialect of Greek Ryan uses. Someone, Petros, the man with the necklace of thorns, is gone, vanished. And this is bad, but Brendan doesn't care. He's hungry, so hungry his entire body hurts, and thirsty, his throat and lips and mouth on fire. He rolls off a bed and crawls across the floor to a door that pushes open into a warm room with a fireplace. Ryan is there, shouting at Spencer in Greek about the relic, about a rite that Petra should have helped them with, and the shouting breaks off when they notice him. Ryan beams at him, and Spencer follows his gaze for a moment, before a smile of his own joins Ryan's. He seems as happy to see Brendan as his partner. "Good evening, my nightingale," Ryan says, crossing the room and taking his face in his hands. "Happy birthday. How are we tonight?" "Please," Brendan croaks, begging this man again but for something else this time. He doesn't know what. He's just so thirsty, hungry. He's, please, of course, come, let me take care of you. The sooner you can join us somewhere more comfortable, the better." He picks Brendan up in his arms, cradling him like a child. Brendan relaxes into it. He doesn't know why. He doesn't care. He's hungry, and Ryan will feed him. They come to a stop before a naked young man, blonde, muscular, older than Brendan, but younger than Kara was. He is tied with his arms above his head, naked and gagged. The smell of blood oozing from the bite marks covering his bare form makes Brendan's whole body tighten and roll. The smell is beautiful, almost tactile. He wants to taste, wants to gorge himself on it. Ryan sets him on his feet before the man and strokes the fine hairs at the back of his neck. "Isn't he lovely? We got him just for you. He tastes like sunlight and fear." "Go on," Ryan urges, with a gentle press of his fingertips. "Take a bite. I know how hungry you are, little bird." The man screams behind his gag, twitching and writhing against his bonds. It makes his blood ooze out of the wounds, and Brendan takes one deep breath. It's a brand new sensation, the way smell vibrates through his body for a long instant. Then instinct overrides interest, and he bites. He bites and drinks long and deep, and Ryan laughs, loud and clear and beautiful beside him, while the man thrashes and dies under Brendan's tongue. He lifts his head and licks his lips to look at Ryan, his maker, his teacher, who promised to show him beautiful sights and take him away from his grief. He has, Brendan realizes, as the lightness fills his chest. He's taken everything away, and all that's left is this, the blood and the joy of laughing with him over the body of the handsome man who now swings limp between them. I am going to teach you so much, Ryan promises, twisting Brendan's hair so hard it hurts, but oh, it's good. It all feels good now. The pain of the preternaturally strong fist and the pleasure of his skin melding together into one blur. And you, my beautiful songbird, will learn it all. Brendan nods as best he can, with his head held immobile by an unforgiving hand. He wants to. He wants it all. It's easy here. Empty and joyous and bloody and free. It is everything he wants because there is nothing else left. Nothing at all. The end. Might as well face it, addicted to love. Might as well.